This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
I'm going to continue on from last week, and we'll be over the summer. Essentially, we're going to be exploring the issue of ethics and the relationship of ethics to mindfulness. Last week, if you weren't here, I talked about sort of the overview of why ethics are important and how they might be connected to mindfulness. And there's many things I said. I'll just make a few of the points to remind us, if you weren't here, just a reminder that these are the way that I like to look at it is not that these are teachings that are imposed by someone coming down, like, for instance, that often happens in religious contexts, but are something that are very living, that we can explore for ourselves, that we can really make it our own, and that they become a practice. They're not just like an idea. It is a practice that any of us can take on, and we can link it to our meditation. And that's when it gets really, really interesting. And so today we're going to look at a particular ethical precept, and we will also think about, like, oh, how is this related to me, and how can I work with it in ways to grow and deepen our own exploration? I also talked about that ethics are not only religious; they happen quite significantly. There's a whole field of philosophy looking at secular ethics, and that they are something that can be part of our everyday life. It's just, I mean, we're dealing with ethical questions all the time. Should I cut? Sometimes they're not exactly ethical, but they're in that territory. Like, oh, am I taking this person's parking space? Is that taking what hasn't been offered to me? Right? There can be these very little things. But when we start to open the door to our awareness on ethics, it's actually very, very interesting. And last thing, maybe I'll just say a couple more things, that we do it out of the sense of we can see ethics as a sense of we're all in this together, that we are not living as separate beings, although it appears that way, but that that we're all related, we're all mutually connected. And when we see that we are a family in the broadest sense, of course, how we treat others is incredibly significant, and how we treat ourselves is also important. So also the ethics are related also you'll see how we treat ourselves as well. And then I talked about how they're a training, that oftentimes we don't do it perfectly, and that's okay, but we learn from it. And that they're also something that we can use to look at the larger institutions in our culture, and that sense of, are people following ethics on a larger global scale? And it's almost like we can use ethical guidelines as an audit, like audit. Oh, I don't think people are behaving ethically in this area. Okay, so how do we practice with it? I'm gonna just put this handout in the chat, and if you can't see it, it's only because you're listening later. It's the 5 ethical trainings that I talked about in the previous week, and you can find it, but I wanted people to be able to have that. And they say, knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to protect life. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to take only what is offered to me, to be generous. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to protect relationships and avoid harming through my sexual energy or actions. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to speak truthfully and wisely. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to promote the clarity of my mind by being wise about what I consume. So today we're going to explore the first one, and the way we're going to do it is we're going the way that you can practice with this. Well, let's talk about this precept, and then we can discuss how you can practice with this at home. So the first one I say is I undertake the training to protect life, which is in other interpretations. Remember, there are multiple interpretations. Many different teachers have talked about this in different ways, but it's essentially thou shalt not kill, right? That's the basic. But I think it can be way more nuanced than that. Non-harming is a broader basis for all those five ethical trainings. So this first one is kind of crucial because it underlies every single one of them. And in the definition of it, it's about not killing intentionally and avoiding unintentional killing. Okay, so this is important because you have to realize that we're killing microbes when we shower, right? I mean, there's little creatures on our body, and we take a hot shower and we're killing them. When we walk, we're walking down the street and we're stepping on bugs and little ants and creatures. And so there's unintentional killing that happens all the time. Now, it's interesting because there's a sect of a religious sect called Jainism. Some of you may be familiar with that, right? And they're very, very strict around this not killing. They're vegetarian. They're so strict that if you're an everyday, person who follows it, but if you're a monastic in one of their orders, they wear a mask so that you don't breathe in any flies or bugs or anything. And when they walk down the street, they have a little broom that sweeps the street in front of them so that they don't step on any animals or creatures or bugs. So there are people who take this very, very seriously. And for most of us, that's probably not going to be our reality. But I want to point out that if you have this sense of like, being an ethical person means being a pure person. That's not reality. Like, there's no way in an interconnected world that we can have a purity. Because of the structures of our society and our global systems of goods and services, and just the way that the world functions right now, we are connected to harming. You cannot be, unless you're living off the grid and you're like, eating, I guess like gardening all your own food. But even then, some people argue, oh, are you killing plants? Right. This can get really tricky, right? When we start to go, but unless you're living off the grid and you have no computer or no, right? Because think about computers and think about all of the, there's a lot that goes into the mining of the minerals, and there's abuses that happen, right? I mean, there is harming, like, children mining and working in these factories, right? With pretty much everything we do. So unfortunately, I just need to bring it to our mind that purity is not what we're talking about, because it is impossible to be pure unless maybe you're a Jain monk or nun, and which is incredible, and then it's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful heartfelt practice. So it's not about purity, but it's also not about going, oh well, the world is interconnected, and there's so much, my coffee is abusive to these people in this country, and my right, and so I don't care. That's also not the right approach in my mind, right? And what's more important is that we investigate, that we explore, that we keep looking at the ethics as they arise in order to deepen our practice of wisdom, self-awareness, and compassion. That these precepts are not about turning you into something pure that's unrealistic. They're not about living out of fear and feeling like I can't do anything right. They're not about you need to do this or you're bad. They're not any of those things. They're about how do we deepen our own understanding and lean into the goodness that we all have the capacity to be. And it's going to be very, very nuanced and it's complex. And like so, and we were saying earlier, it doesn't always, it's not like there's one thing that's always right in every moment. So as we explore these precepts over this coming, these, I call them precepts also because they're rooted in the Buddhist world where they're called precepts. But I'm calling them ethical trainings. I'm not going to tell you what to do or what is right. My suggestion is that you explore it in yourself to come to a place where you can rest in your own integrity. How do your actions foster connectedness and compassion? When do they foster disconnection, isolation, harming? Integrity, remember, I defined it as not what makes me feel good, but what makes me feel good about myself. And the big question is, how and who do you want to be in the world? What do you want to stand for? What do you care about? How do you step into the world and like who are you in this world? I mean, these are questions for all of us. I'm going to close the door because it's distracting me. Hold on. Okay. So with that being said, let's talk about this specificity of this one. So I undertake the training to protect life or not to kill. So let's talk about killing. There are all these questions, ready? I'm going to throw a bunch at you. How do you relate to mosquitoes? Most of us swat mosquitoes. In some communities where people take these vows really seriously, they don't swat mosquitoes. You cover up and you put on bug spray and you stay out at certain times of the day. Or ants. Like, what happens if your house gets infested with ants? Do you call the exterminator? Where is your level of like comfort? You know, oh my gosh, I have so many skunk stories. But we had skunks that went into the basement. You know, the grate was broken and it went down there. And one day we're just sitting there and this like horrible skunk smell comes into the house. And we had to call a guy, but it was a no kill one. And evidently the skunk got out. We never saw it in the trap. But what do you do when your house is infested with skunks or bugs or rats that could potentially hurt you because they have something that could hurt your children or, you know, disease or like these are great questions. And, you know, I've been around meditation centers for 35 years or so, and there's always a whole deal with when the ants come out, what are we going to do? And there's the cinnamon, and then there's the trying this, and it causes like this great. Well, here's what's great about it. It forces people to not be oblivious. It forces people to grapple directly with the question of life and what is leading to more compassion, more kindness. And are there times when, and we'll talk about this in a minute, when killing may be compassionate, such as euthanasia or when an animal is sick or something like that. So it's not cut and dried. I think I've made that clear. I'll just tell you my recent skunk story because it's crazy. I was sitting in my house at like 11 o'clock at night, and we had the back door open, like a screen door open, and this little skunk just
Oh my
walked into
gosh.
my house. I could not believe it. It was a juvenile, right? It was very young. I mean, not that young. It's probably like, I don't know. Who knows? I don't know how old this guy is. And it was my family just started going, "There's a skunk. There's a skunk. What are we gonna do?" And all I could do in that moment was think, this is going to be horrible. My mind went straight into it's going to be horrible. There were the, I was the, imagining him spraying me, spraying my daughter, spraying everyone in the house, spraying our dog. The dog was actually pretty calm. I thought the dog would go straight for it, but they went, and the skunk was calm, and everybody was just sitting there and like staring each other down, like, what are we going to do? This is not really a killing story. I just wanted to tell you about the skunk that happened to my in my house the other day. So finally, we were like, I wonder if we could shoo him out with a broom. And so I got a broom and I was able to do it. And I pushed him out and slammed the door and he got out. It was very exciting. But what was interesting about it was the way my mind went into all of the worst case scenarios. Like right there, you could just say, boom, 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 boom. It's going to be horrible. I'm going to have to throw out all our furniture. We're going to have to repaint. We're going to have to boom. I don't know what happened. The gods were with me, but we didn't do it. Anyway, that's not really a killing story, but I wanted to tell you about the skunk. Okay. So here's other questions about killing. Do I, you know, some people hunt and some people fish. And for some people, it can be a profoundly spiritual act, right? In certain cultures, hunting is done in very spiritual ways, but it is killing animals. And what do we hunt for sport or do we hunt for food? And do we fish for sport? Do we fish for food, right? These are the questions that each of us have to grapple with. What happens if a pet is sick? Is there wise, I'm putting this in quote, wise killing to put an animal out of their misery? Is there ever justified killing? You know, there are these incredible stories in certain Buddhist literature that I've encountered over the years. There's this one story where it's very cosmological. So like a Buddha was omniscient. He knew everything. He had like psychic powers, and he was on a boat and he saw that there was a person on the boat who was planning to murder everybody, like the hundreds of passengers on a boat. And so he knew with his omniscience to kill this guy to prevent everybody else from dying, right? This is like a crazy, weird, you know, ancient story. A Buddha is doing that, right? How, what a weird story. You know, you would think, okay, could you just capture him? You don't have to kill him. But if we had omniscience, is there, I guess we're asking, is killing ever justified if it could save countless beings? If someone had gone back in time and was able to stop Hitler, to kill Hitler, for instance, right? Like these are weird, crazy questions, but they're important to think about in terms of like, where is my edge? Where is my understanding? What is meaningful to me? What would I do in self-defense? What would I do if my family or my children or people I love were under threat? So that's just like the direct killing piece that we can look at. And then there is what about reaping the benefits of other people's killing? Now, our, you know, a lot of people are, may choose to be vegetarians for ethical reasons because of the inhumane conditions under which animals live. But can you still be a meditator and be mindful and eat meat? There's a plenty of people who do, you know. And if you're not killing the meat, does that count? So, you know, if you're not killing the animal, right? It, I mean, these are again interesting. Yeah, just to answer someone's question, in the story, I believe the assassin, the Buddhist got rid of the assassin, killed the assassin before he was able to hurt the other people, saving countless lives, right? So going back to this indirect killing, do I wear leather and fur? But did I, is that, does that count? I mean, this is for you to think about, right? As an exploration in many of the things that we enjoy every day, there is harming. There is, and if we were to, we could live in a way where we would just like be frozen because there's so much harming everywhere. And there are some people who worry about, you know, plants and animals and trees and their feel, right? Like there's different, again, huge levels of different ways of thinking about this. So this is for us to look at ourselves. And then when we think about the institutions that we're a part of, what is my relationship to institutions that promote killing? What is my relationship to the military? What is my relationship to my taxes that support the military? Believe me, I'm not suggesting anything. I'm just like opening up the field. What about where do I stand with the death penalty? Where do I stand with abortion, with euthanasia? And these are massively complex issues. These are not, okay, you shouldn't, in my mind, you shouldn't kill, and therefore you stand for boom, 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 boom. It is, there's so many pieces to weigh in every single situation. And so, as I'm pointing out to you, this is about us not being, what is the word I'm looking for? But just like we can go into kind of like a freeze or not caring or just going through life without awareness of this stuff. And when we actually bring it into our consciousness and do it as a practice, we can move towards certainly not perfection and purity, but places of deeper compassion and understanding. So, and I'm going to talk about how we would do that with this precept in a second. Let me just finish this off, the last couple of things I'm going to say. So, what does, if we were to look at this from the other direction, what does protecting life require or ask of us in this world? Does protecting life mean protesting against militarization? Or does it mean does it mean becoming a vegetarian? Does it mean a certain kinds of activism? Does it, I mean, there's so many ways that we can, or does it mean how do we can do we live with kindness? Is it just about how can we live with an open-hearted kindness where we value the humanity of every person we encounter? This is a beautiful way to think about the precept. How can I be kind here? How can I see the humanity and protect the life of each person? But if I say that, does that also mean the people you disagree with, the politicians who are making you feel bananas right now? Can we see the humanity in everyone? Is that part of the precept? This is for us to explore. It could be the practice of seeing interconnection in the middle of life. Like, how do we remember that important value of we are not separate? We all are dependent upon each other in so many ways. So this is the first of these different kinds of this. This is the first of these training, these mindfulness ethical trainings. And how do we work with it using mindfulness? That's the first question. So what we would do is we would make a decision to observe some behavior and notice what happens if you stick to it or don't stick to it. So what would that mean? With this particular precept, you would decide for yourself, what do I want to do that is in the spirit of the precept? And maybe it's I'm not going to be a vegetarian, but I'm going to do meatless Mondays and Thursdays or something, right? You're gonna just, it doesn't have to be like a big, gigantic thing and change your life, but maybe that feels aligned. And as you check with yourself, you're like, oh, okay, this feels really aligned with me and what I'd like to do. Or it might be that you make a commitment to get rid of the ants in your house using without killing them, or you make a commitment to work for against militarization or something, or you know, there's so much that's happening right now that seems quite harming. And how can we stand up for people who are in need, the people who are most defenseless? So you pick something and you decide to do it, and then you spend your time not necessarily doing it perfectly, but noticing what's happening. Like, okay, I've chosen meatless Mondays, but Monday comes along and my spouse made this incredible chicken and I really want it. Am I going to do it or not? And you get to notice your mind and see what happens. Because when you make a commitment, sometimes it's easy to keep it, sometimes it's not easy to keep it. And you get to, but not to judge yourself, not to get mad at yourself if you don't do it, but forgive yourself and just start again. And use your mindfulness in the moment to notice the thoughts and feelings about it and notice that important, that sense of me. You know, there's something I notice with mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are like teensy, right? Mosquitoes are tiny and they're terrifying to us because they're awful. We hate mosquito bites. And when this little mosquito that's 1 millionth the size of us is like this foe to humans. And when I see one coming, I'm like, ooh, I want it out of my life. Swat, or a fly or something. That sense of like the importance of me versus this importance of this little being. Why does it, is that, maybe that's something I need to look at. You know, for many years, I'll just confess, for many years, when I first started meditating, I don't know whether it came out of my meditation practice exactly or whether it was that I was that I would that I just decided to do it. I'm like, I'm not going to kill bugs anymore. I'm done. I'm not going to kill bugs. And so I really worked on it for years and years. And that wasn't the unintentional one. Sometimes I'd walk down the street, I'd kill a bug, but I'd try not to kill mosquitoes or ants or anything. And then I started doing this thing where I started getting other people to kill them for me. So I would get my husband at the time, like, get rid of that fly, but I'm not going to do it. So what's going on there, right? Something to look at. And then when my daughter was born and the mosquitoes would go for her, I was like, oh, no, boom. That was the end of my vow to not kill mosquitoes. So it was, and now I work with it. Now at this point, I try not to, but sometimes I do. It still makes me a little uncomfortable. Just, it's my own thing, but I explore it and I get curious about it. Oh, that's interesting. What's happening here? And so this ethical training, this one is a very like concrete and hard and challenging one. Some of the others that we'll be exploring are more they're a little easier, like working with speech or working with things that we consume. This one is hard because it's vast, complex. We live in a world that is interdependent. And the idea here is as we play with this, as we explore it, that we do it in the spirit of kindness and forgiveness to ourselves, that non-harming also can mean not harming ourselves, right? Being loving, compassionate to ourselves. That's part of this precept to protect life. That means our own life too. Caring for love, caring, compassion, kindness. This is all part of the work of this particular ethical training. Okay, so I'll give a little bit of time if there are any questions or comments. And this is just to see where you're at with this, and then we'll do a little practice around it. Oh, is that Shelley? I see your hand.
It's not really a question, but it's something that I've been, I don't know, thinking about a lot. We do have in the summer bugs come into our house. And the other day we have an aide come once a week, and she saw one of these bugs and she got like frantic and wanted to kill them, and you got to get rid of them. And I don't know, I see a single ant or I don't know what they are. They're so little, or a spider, okay. And I just can't kill them anymore. I mean, it used to be that I think I was just not mindful, totally unaware, and just kill them because they shouldn't be in my house or they're not good for me or whatever. And now I see them as these teeny little, like you said, now mosquitoes are another thing. I don't know. I don't want them to bite me. I try not to swat them, but that's difficult. But ants and whatever they are, I don't want to harm them, It's like I'm very conscious of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice that you sense into yourself and you see what is this level of comfort. And there's this part of you that really wants to protect these little babies,
Yeah.
and that's what you're doing, and that's great. And that and that's the invitation to all of us. Like, where am I with this? Where is my sensitivity? There's not a right answer. It's not like what Shelley's doing is what I'm recommending that everybody does. It's us finding out for ourselves. And so, I know mosquitoes are harder than the ants. They sort of like live and let live. But some people are starting to put down here. There are good bugs and bugs that carry disease, right? Of course. And so that goes to the bit that sort of that story. If you knew that there was a bug that was causing all this disease, would that be more ethical to extinguish that bug and its species or something, or to not kill? And it seems like it would make sense that if a bug had, malaria or something, well, what did they do? It's hard to get rid of malaria mosquitoes. They gave us vaccinations instead. But anyway, these are great questions. And thank you, Shelley, for bringing that up and just for hearing a little bit about your internal process. Someone did say scented talcum powder works best for ants. Good to know. And let's see. Carl said, when the precept says to protect life, I think of not cutting off funding to help people access healthcare and food, right? So when we're protecting life, it's a very broad concept, and it can help us to really think like, oh boy, I know this feels wrong inside me. I don't like it, but now I get why, because it is going directly against this ethical training of protecting life. And therefore, what does that mean for me? Does that mean calling my senators? Does that mean protesting? Does that mean giving to food banks? Does that mean like what? Because it's not just how I feel about something, it's then what I do. This is why the ethics component is the really interesting part of mindfulness, because it's about living our lives. Mindfulness, we meditate, we come to realizations, we understand things, and then we act in the world. And so, yes, exactly what you're saying, Carl. Now then what do we do? And not that there's a clear answer, certainly not at this moment. Mariel wrote, it's interesting to think about individuals versus population. I don't want to kill an ant myself. It's a sentient creature. Yet when it's an infestation, it's easier to distance yourself from it and hire pest control. Yes, the new euphemism for exterminators, pest control, right? No, totally, totally. And if your house is infested, we don't want to live like that. Most people don't. And these are thorny. These are not like a simple thing. And and I also don't want you to, I want to also be careful if you're getting into this and you really want to think about it, don't tie yourself up in knots and feel like this is impossible. I can't do it either. It's as I said, it's an exploration. CS wrote, it seems like a continuum to me, determined by our respect on one end to comfort broadly defined on the other. Sometimes that is the case. I mean, it's not always the case with the killing or the protecting life, but sometimes it is definitely like comfort, our own comfort versus the comfort of another being. And we kind of have to find where we land there. So yeah, these are interesting and confusing, and here's what I would like to do. Any other comments or questions before we just do a short meditation? Okay, so we're gonna just reflect for a moment on this particular ethical training. So I just invite you to relax a bit or settle back or get comfortable, and we'll take some breaths and come back into our bodies. And we've been up in the head thinking about a lot of things. So now just coming back into our body, taking some breaths. And so I'm going to invite a reflection that you're welcome to do or not do. It's up to you. But if you were, let's say, in the next week or two, to practice with this ethical guideline, what do you want to commit to? And it could be, I'll give you some examples, but also don't worry, you can change it if you change your mind, but let's just say for now, what would you like to commit to trying? So it might be something change in diet. It might be related to bugs or pests or creatures. It might be to what you wear, leather or fur, those types of things. It might be to one of the larger issues. Like I don't really know what I want to do, but I'm really concerned about the harming I see here. And just what name it, you can just name it, the harming I see. Like someone mentioned food being taken away from people, loss of medical, right? And I want to explore this week. And see what emerges in my life that I might want to do in response. Might be related to any of the very big picture issues, like I mentioned death penalty, euthanasia, abortion. You mentioned many different things. Or you might want to take the other side, like, what can I do to protect life this week? What can I do to create less harming or more kindness, more compassion? Okay, I've given you a lot of things. So just take a moment to reflect for yourself. What's something, and I recommend kind of small. Don't pick this a huge thing, but what do you want to play with and explore as a mindfulness exploration in the coming week? If you're not certain, you might just say, I'm open to see what happens in life. Maybe something will emerge. And once you have something, if you do, notice what the commitment is, make the commitment, and then notice what that feels like to make that commitment. Keep it small, keep it doable. Know that you will be exploring what happens as you try to stick to this commitment. You don't have to do it perfectly. It's using your mindfulness to see what happens as you try to do this. And then forgiving yourself and being kind. It's a lifelong practice. Okay, so let's now, if your eyes are closed, let's open our eyes. And let us, I would love you to put into the chat, if you want to, what you are thinking that you're going to explore this week. Meanwhile, someone had a book recommendation. Strangers Drowning: Notes from the Far Side of the Moral Ethics Charity. Oh, great. Okay, so it's a book quite relevant to what we're doing here. So much of the teaching for me is differentiating between real danger and fear. Yeah, it's a great point, Heather. It's not always easy. Vegetarian dinner once a week. Less time on Instagram, more time helping friends. Oh, Strangers Drowning book. Intentional patience with friend. Nice. Anybody else willing to put it in what they're going to do? Or maybe they're not going to do anything. I'm a vegetarian, going to better understand cruelty-free clothing. Great. That's interesting. Reaching out to old friends 1 to 2 times a week. Even if I do kill a mosquito, stop and recognize it's a living creature. Think about my connection to all living creatures. Avoid talking, acting hurtfully towards others and myself. Bring some food to the food bank several times this week. I like to feed the birds and make sure they have water. Continue being vegan. Continue not eating beef and trying not to kill insects. These are all fantastic. Yeah, those are, I mean, everything. And they're all different. And they're all like you finding your edge for yourself. And that's what I love. Connect more with nature and birds, right? And you see that some people are taking the approach of like, don't, and some people are taking the approach of do. Treat everyone I meet with kindness. Awesome. Try veganism for this week only. I'm vegetarian already. Yeah, see what happens. I'm not, by the way, I'm not, remember, I'm not saying you should do this, you should do that. I have explored food and diet for so many years in terms of, so I've been vegetarian, I've been vegan, I've been not, I've been, so it changes for me. So I'm not telling you what Diana says, do this. Do a food pantry donation, drop off to a community fridge. I think I'm going to jump on that one that's a couple of you have put. I think I'm going to do something like that. I see Suda raising your hand.
I'm already vegan,
Ah.
and I already take the bugs out. Yeah, I don't kill them, but now I kind of got the idea I should put those plastic containers in a couple of rooms because I have, when I go get my container, the bugs goes away. It hides somewhere. So now I got the idea I should put those containers in a couple of places. Usually I have in the closet and my kitchen. But now I need to put in the bathroom because this time we get those centipedes a lot, and I just take them out. Actually, they are good because they eat other bugs, but my cats eat it, and I don't know if they carry some diseases or anything. So I just take them out. So I keep the water for the birds. Ants, the scented powder were so good. As soon as you put the scented powder, they just disappear and you don't have to
Oh,
kill them.
that's good to know. Well, I love what you're saying. I love that you're just refining some things that you already do with your life and see what happens when you take it to the next level, right?
25 years ago, I think I killed the toad. The frog used to come at my front door and it used to eat the bugs. And I used to be so scared of anything which jumps. And actually, the frog was more scared of me than I was scared of frog. But I learned that later on in my life, not that time. So I sprayed Bugs Be Gone, the spray. We used to have those. I don't know because I don't buy any chemicals anymore. So I think I killed them, and I still feel bad about that. I mean, I'm so guilty, actually.
Oh, I totally hear you, and also, I mean, going back to that thing I said, it's impossible to do things perfectly or purely. We're gonna do that from time to time, but you're very sensitive and you're attuned, so just keep going and see what happens as you play with it more.
Thank you.
So just a few more comments that came in. Training my kids not to freak out whenever they see a spider. I'm gonna do that too. Mine freaks out every time. And then or and also flies. Get the fly swatter. I think you have to distinguish between creatures that are harmful, like mosquitoes, versus others, like ants or fish. Yeah. So that's something to pay attention to is the type of animal and your relationship to it. Someone wrote, I love bees. Continue to use a broom to push the live mice outside when my cats bring them as gifts. Okay, good. The broom worked great for me with the skunk, I'll tell you that. I had my life like flashed before my eyes. Like the hell, it's everything's gonna be horrible. Oh my, you can see the way the mind just goes into the worst case scenario, and somehow I got him out with kindness. One of my family members is going, "Here, sweetie, go outside, sweetie." They're adorable, those skunks. They're actually really, really cute if they didn't smell. And then my daughter's telling me there's like a woman on TikTok who had the scent removed and has it as a little pet, and it's super cute. Anyway, on that note, I think we will close our time. And some of the classes that we do on the ethics, I may involve some interactive activity. We could have, if we had more time, I would have had done that today with us talking with each other to kind of go over it. But I think we're running out of time, so I'm not going to do that. But others, we may do some interactive, and people can choose to stay or not for that as they wish. And then next week, Tom Hia is coming, and he's a wonderful teacher. And then I'm back. And then I think we have one more person. I think most of the rest of August I'm around. Okay. So we have our day of mindfulness coming up, and we have a lot of people registered. It's going to be really, if you are in California or you want to come in LA, we have a day of practice. Marvin Belzer and I will be doing that together. We have our ongoing drop-in meditations, mailing list. So let's just take a moment to take a breath or two as we sense into ourselves and this community of people. I'm really, it's very touching in a way to see when the world is filled with so much hatred and violence and absence of ethics. It's very nourishing to be in a room of people who want to live in a way of non-harming and respect and kindness, and who are working on themselves and who are living as beacons of integrity and goodness in this world. So, just to maybe appreciate each other, I'm appreciating all of you.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.